Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hello and welcome to the 5 Yard Dynasty podcast with me, Rich Cooling, and Liam. How you doing?
All good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Slightly chaotic weekend, but yeah, felt nice to get back to some normality this week. How was your dynasty week?
Let's not talk about my dynasty week. If we can talk about my redrafts, I'm doing extremely well in my redrafts. I think I'm in the playoffs in all but one of my non-best ball redraft leagues. Lovely. And then dynasty-wise, I may as well just be rebuilding in every single one. This week was awful. Kyler Murray being out, confirmed out, really hurt me because I wasn't around to take him out of about 4 lineups.
Ouch.
So not good when your quarterback one gets confirmed out.
Yeah, it was a horrible week this week, wasn't it? So I won in my 2 home leagues and I got a win in Scott Fishbowl. But yeah, my dynasty leagues, it was my first losing week in terms of total wins losses humble across all my leagues of the season. Perhaps not so humble. but yeah, was a tough week. I mean, any week when, you know, all the studs basically don't turn up, it's going to be painful, isn't it? But just to remind everybody, so support for the 5 Yard Dynasty podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who are the best in the men's below-the-waist grooming. We've got an exclusive offer for you. If you use the code 5YARD, you'll get 20% off and free worldwide shipping. We've also got another exciting free roll with Fan Team on Sunday for the Red Zone contest. So tune in on Thursday to the DFS live stream and podcast. They'll be setting it all up. But I think they had 1,200 entries last week. How did you get on them?
Oh, why do you keep doing this, Rich? I just said my week wasn't good. I came somewhere in the 900 range. It was not a good week for me. None of my receivers did well at all. So
if it makes
break down my score.
If it makes you feel better, my fan team week was absolutely dreadful. It was my second ever week doing DFS, and after week one, I think I was 450% up, and I was thinking this DFS stuff's easy. Why does everyone say it so hard? And then I basically lost everything this week. It was somewhat painful and a bounce back to reality. But Liam, we have got 2 very exciting giveaways because we've hit 1,000 followers on Twitter. Did you want to talk us through and explain to us or to the people what the giveaways are going to be?
Yeah, so I know that some joker out there is going to hear that and unfollow us now, so we go back to $9.99. but this, we've got 2. We've decided to do 2. So to try and get a bit more engagement on the live stream, because we had a bit of engagement a couple of weeks ago, and we both enjoyed it and realized that we don't actually talk to people live that often. If you ask any question this week through the live chat, so that's either on YouTube, on Twitter, or on Facebook, so we'll be going till about 9 o'clock. So you don't have to ask your question now, you can wait for the section that you want to come up. But if you ask us any question or interact with us in any way, we'll be drawing from that list of people that do interact with us. And we'll be giving away a Dynasty roster review. So that'll be both myself and Rich. We'll look at one of your Dynasty rosters. We'll do a little write-up, give our opinions. If you tell us whether you want to rebuild or contend or what you want to do with it, we'll give our best opinions on that, or whether you should be doing that or looking at a different route. So please interact with us. Just in case anyone comes on the stream late, I'll drop a little banner at the bottom. Then for our big giveaway this week, this is one we've talked about quite a bit. I know we had this set up for a couple of weeks ago. So myself and Rich will be buying one person a 5-yard rush t-shirt. Of course, the 1 week I don't actually have a 5-yard rush t-shirt on, I've got the FFCC one on today. We'll be giving away any 5-yard rush t-shirt that they want from the 5-yard rush shop. So go on, have a look on there. Then we'll ship it out to you if you're in the US. That might be a little bit different. We'll have to have a little discussion on what you want to do with that, because shipping might be really expensive. We'll have to have a look.
I think what we'll say is UK, we'll ship it for free. Internationally, we'd ask for a contribution towards shipping.
Well, there you go. But to enter that, by the 6 o'clock games on Sunday, you need to DM the 5-yard Dynasty accounts at 5-yard Dynasty. And you need to just tell us what the cocktail of the week was this week. Now, Rich,
drum roll, please.
Perfectly what, into the next segment.
What's the cocktail of the week?
It's not a pink one. I've got a lemon bonbon.
I like the glass.
Stole one of my girlfriend's passion fruit martini glasses. So, lemon bonbon, all it is limoncello, butterscotch syrup, vodka, and lemonade. I've used vanilla syrup. Vanilla vodka in it, but feel free to add in any other syrups or anything you want in there. But yeah, it does taste nice. I'm not going to take a sip because I had one just before the show started.
It's going to be half cut by the end of the show.
Yeah, it's a little bit strong on the alcohol front, so I don't want to down it too quickly.
Fantastic. Well, if you start slowing your words by the end of the show, we all know why. So diving straight in then, Liam, the highest scorers on the week. Did you want to give us a whistle-stop tour through that?
Yeah. So as usual, 4-point touchdowns for quarterbacks and his PPR for all other positions, no tight end premium. So start of the quarterback position, Rich. Lamar, Justin Herbert, and Matt Ryan. I think the surprise there for me is Matt Ryan at the top, in the top three for the first time in this season, at least. I can't remember the last time he was a top three quarterback in any week.
Yeah, strange, isn't it? Calvin Ridley finally, you know, out for a prolonged period of time and suddenly starts producing. But that Falcons offense has finally worked out that Cordarrelle Patterson and Kyle Pitts are movable pieces, and, you know, they can dictate personnel groupings on defense because of those two. And it's opened up that offense. I'm very excited to see, you know, what it does for the rest of the year. I'm very excited to see if they do get Calvin Ridley back in a couple of weeks, what that offense could look like.
Yeah, so moving on to the running back position, we had a bunch of high scorers this week, but James Conner, Jonathan Taylor and Nick Chubb all scored really well this week. There's the top three. The one I wanted to highlight really was Jonathan Taylor, and I know you want to speak about him as well. I didn't think anyone was going to beat him as the running back one this week after he scored 34 points, I think it was, 34 points against the Jets, your beloved Jets.
Less than about that, the better.
The only thing I also want to say is the fact that Naeem Hines also scored 20 points, so that backfield alone scored 50-odd points.
Let's just say the Jets linebacking core isn't exactly covering itself in glory this year.
No, so moving on to the wide receiver position. This is what you wanted to talk about, Rich. It's the only reason we come on the pod every week is so you can talk about some Jets player that's broken out. So Elijah Moore with an insane game on Thursday night football, Friday morning for us. Devonta Smith came in wide receiver 2 and Keenan Allen at the wide receiver 3 position.
Yeah, it's doubly pleasing, isn't it, when I get to talk about Elijah Moore. He was my pre-draft darling, and then has obviously landed on the Jets. And I was somewhat nervous because it's like when you fall in love with a player before the draft, and then your team drafts him, it's like, oh my god, if they're terrible, it's going to be doubly painful. But look, he's been hinting at it. He's been, you know, highlighting, sort of flashing throughout the season so far. He's not sort of put it all together. Not a fantastic kind of raw numbers, you know, only 15% target share, A odds were less than 100. But anytime you're catching 2 touchdowns, it's always going to buoy your fantasy points week, isn't it? I do think this is a guy that's, you know, has got the potential to be a wide receiver 1 in an NFL team. I think his ceiling is, you know, something like a Diontae Johnson, you know, a guy that can get open at will, that can be a movable piece, line up in the slot, line up out wide, and can, you know, I hate using the term, but that sort of alpha wide receiver one, because people say alpha and it's got to be, you know, 6'4" and runs a 4.440. But to me, a wide receiver one is a guy that can lead the team in targets and produce. And I really believe that Elijah Moore can be that moving forward. And I wouldn't be shocked if next year Elijah Moore's the target leader for the Jets in what I'm hoping is an improving offense next year.
Yeah, I like Elijah Moore a lot pre-draft. I just want what you said for my wide receiver crush of the draft, Amari Rodgers. I want him to prove everyone wrong at the moment, because he's not really been involved so far.
Negative fantasy points this week, wasn't it? Didn't he have a fumble and no other points?
Right, let's move on to the tight end position then, guys. So, Pat Freiermuth, George Kittle and Travis Kelce, top three this week. And I know you wanted to mention Darren Waller as the tight end four. Are we getting back to normal?
Well, it felt like, you know, I teed it up. It was going to be normal service resumed, you know, the elite three tight ends back at tight end 1, 2, 3. And then Pat Freiermuth, you know, decides to catch two touchdowns on Monday Night Football and kind of ruins it. But yeah, I think, look, George Kittle showed he's a, you know, true stud once healthy. And I think, you know, Travis Kelce had a fairly poor game. Like, I still don't think he looks fully healthy. I don't know if Patrick Mahomes is fully healthy, if I'm being honest.
I don't know what's going on with that Chiefs offense, because it did not look good against us. We took away the deep option to Hill a lot, and there were a couple of throws where I thought Mahomes were going to take Kelce underneath for an easy 10 to 15, maybe 20 yards. And he tried to lob it up to Hardman or Hill on a deeper route. And I just don't think that decision-making's there. Now that teams have figured out if they take away the deep option, it doesn't really want to go anywhere else.
I think for me, watching Sunday, I think it's an accuracy issue. And that's why I said I wonder if Patrick Mahomes isn't fit, whether he's got this, you know, he had the toe injury, and I wonder if that's potentially still lingering around. Because, you know, he's missing on throws that he doesn't normally miss on. And I think that for me is the biggest question mark, is that, yes, something's not right. They're missing that third playmaker. You know, obviously it was Sammy Watkins, who was never going to be a stud for fantasy purposes, but it was still an option that defense had to
respect
look at
him. You had to respect him over the top.
Josh Gordon's not even close to that, and they've got no one else. You know, Mecole Hardman's never turned into anything. And I just think that it's basically teams realise if you take away those two, and I don't think Mahomes is, as I said, has got that elite accuracy at the moment. Don't get me wrong, he's still got the arm talent that he can fire the ball in anywhere across the field. But I think there's something there, whether it's that he can't plant his feet, can't follow through properly. I think there's potentially a little niggly injury that he's carrying that we don't know about at the moment.
So moving on to the significant news, and Pat Mahomes is not on the significant news this week. So I'm just going to whiz through a couple and then jump in when you want, Rich, as usual. But breaking news as of a couple of hours ago, as of recording on Tuesday night, Nick Chubb and Dimitri Felton have both tested positive for COVID-19. So they will be going on the COVID-19 reserve list. That means it's D'Ernest Johnson's backfield completely.
So I think if they can produce, it's 5 days and two negative tests, isn't it? So
if they're vaccinated, yes.
Yeah, so if they're vaccinated, realistically, there's an outside chance. Personally, having had COVID, I think getting two negative tests within, 5 days away now, is going to be some turnaround. So I think, as you said, it's probably D'Ernest Johnson's backfield for the week, which is very interesting to see after they absolutely manhandled the Bengals up front on Sunday.
I don't think there has been an instance where there has been two negative tests within 5 days of each other after a positive this season. So it's worth picking up D'Ernest Johnson in any league that he's still on the waivers for, and he probably shouldn't be at this point. Moving on to Tagovailoa has fractures in his finger And that is in his throwing hand, even though it is his left. He's a lefty. Potentially out 2 to 4 weeks, including last week, so 1 to 3 as of today. Chase Edmonds, high ankle sprain, I believe, didn't return during the game on Sunday, and that's why James Conner had a massive week. I mean, James Conner did well anyway, but he still had a massive week. But Chase Edmonds could be out for another couple of weeks. So
is that,
are you expecting more James Conner?
Yeah, I think Eno Benjamin's worth a mention.
That truck that he had on, who was it, Drake Kirkpatrick, I believe?
It was pretty special, wasn't it? Yeah. And they've already come out and said that he's going to get more of a workload than he did on Sunday. So, you know, potentially could see the Chase Edmonds role. Edmonds, it's one of these horrible high ankle sprains, isn't it, where they can kind of come back after a week or two, but it can take up to 5 or 6 weeks till they're kind of fully back up and running and healthy. So, yeah, I'm not comfortable, you know, starting Edmonds until he is, you know, a week after he comes back, basically, is normally my rule with a high ankle sprain. But it's a painful one because I think he was having a fantastic year, and minus the touchdowns, which, you know, James Conner leads the league now in rushing touchdowns and kept, you know, vulturing them away from Edmonds. Edmonds was having an absolutely fantastic year, wasn't he?
Yeah, he definitely was. Most of that came from the passing down work. So it'll be interesting to see what happens between those two now with the passing game work. So Kyler Murray, high ankle sprain. He was inactive on Sunday. That's, as I said earlier, ruined a couple of my matchups because I wasn't around. So he could be out this week too. So keep an eye out on that one because it's not looking good. Colt McCoy could be a backup there. Zach Moss with a concussion could be out this week. We have seen people with concussions come back. But I know that with a running back, they might want to be a bit more careful. He does play the Jets, so if he is out, maybe it's Devin Singletary time, especially after the
3 weeks after I said that I didn't want to own him and I'd give him away for a fourth-round pick. Then it's karma, isn't it? He's going to come back and have a storming week against my Jets and make me cry.
Not trying to dig your grave a bit too deep there, Rich, but I think every running back that's gone against you has been really good. So,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think it's just a match.
Moving on.
So DeAndre Hopkins as well, hamstring injury. He was out week 9. No news on week 10 yet. And speaking of out in week 9, no news in week 10. James Robinson with a heel injury. This one surprised me, Rich. I don't know whether you saw anything before the games.
Yeah, so I think it was trending that way, wasn't it? It's this sort of weird heel issue. Urban Meyer's come out and said today that he's expecting James Robinson to go in week 10. So hopefully he's back in your lineups because, you know, as someone that owns an awful lot of Carlos Hyde shares, it was not particularly nice having to start him in places.
Especially in the Dynasty Listener League.
Less said about that, the better, Aileen.
So, Michael Gallup and Russell Wilson both potentially being activated. I think Russell Wilson is basically confirmed at this point. All of the news has been that he's coming back and being pulled off the IR. Michael Gallup is a bit more shrouded in mystery at the moment. We haven't heard much of it, but I have started to see reports.
It feels like every week at the start of the week, it's Michael Gallup's going to play this week. And then by the end of the week, he stays on IR. So hopefully he's back playing this week. Because
the one thing I will say is he's practicing. I believe it was as of last week. So I think it's 3 weeks they've got.
It's 21 days, isn't it? They have to activate him. Otherwise, he's done for the year. So I think it's a case of if he doesn't play this week, he's done for the year. But don't quote me on that.
Not like this Devin Singletary, yeah?
No, I stand by that comment.
So, bye weeks, the last significant news. So, Chicago Bears, who played on Monday Night Football, they are out on this week. So, let's see if Nagy actually dials up some sort of game plan. The Cincinnati Bengals, New York Giants, and Houston Texans. So, outside of the Bengals, I don't think you've really got massive dynasty assets that have been helping you consistently each week outside of the quarterbacks, potentially.
I hope, hopefully the Giants having a bye means that Saquon Barkley can actually get healthy and might be able to play week 11 rather than sort of dragging on this ankle injury again.
Fingers crossed. Talking about bye weeks as well, the one surprise active that I had at least was David Montgomery coming back for Monday Night Football. I thought that he was going to be out till the bye week at this point, and they weren't going to risk bringing him back. But
yeah, it was a surprise for me as well. I kind of had the same logic as you. Why rush him back for a Monday night game? You know, potentially give him another 2 weeks rest by not playing him. But they obviously wanted, you know, he did all right. He didn't do fantastic, but he did all right. And obviously all those Khalil Herbert shares that were looking nice are a little less shiny now, aren't they? So what we're going to do this week, rather than diving into our normal risers and fallers, we thought, as it was kind of mid-season-ish, we'd do a kind of a risers and fallers mid-season ADP review. So what we're going to do is we're going to look back at August ADP as per DLF and basically talk through the biggest movers in terms of their value to date. So we'll start positive. So we'll start with the risers. So Matthew Stafford, huge riser. So he was the QB19 in August, which I'll be honest, felt a little bit low.
I saw him taken a lot higher than that in a couple of leagues that I was in.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've got him at the moment. He's my QB12 in Dynasty. I think, look, the way he's looked in that offense this year, you know, you're kind of penciling a QB1 for at least hopefully 3 more years, aren't you, with the way that's going?
Let's just ignore the Sunday Night Football 2 interceptions in like he's allowed 14 seconds of game time.
He's allowed enough week. Another, I guess, big riser. He's not moved much in terms of spots, in terms of ADP, I guess, but in terms of value, I think he's grossly risen. And that was Mac Jones. So he was the QB25 in August. And I think that, you know, in terms of performance on the field, he's probably been the most impressive rookie so far. I think from a fantasy perspective, obviously, he's not been incredible, and I think he's certainly got a cap ceiling, but I think it just shows this is 3 years on the trot now, where the kind of the last QB in the first round from a fantasy perspective has been the best in the rookie year. Obviously, we saw it with Justin Herbert last year, and
last year he wasn't the last rookie in the first round. Rich,
Justin Herbert was.
No, he wasn't.
I'm talking dynasty startup or rookie draft. Okay. I'm not talking okay. NFL draft.
I'll let you off then. I'll let you off.
Yeah, see, trying to pull me up. And then the least surprising QB riser, shall we say, it was my off-season call. Shall we say it's my best call, perhaps? And that was Tyler Heinicke, who was the QB 44 in August. I was telling everybody, Brian Fitzpatrick's trash, go and get Taylor Heinicke. And let's be honest, Tyler Heinicke hasn't been exactly fantastic, but he's returning decent value as a kind of a QB2, QB3 in spot starts, isn't he?
Yeah, I think with Heinicke, you may have got the call right, but the reasoning was wrong. You can't predict injuries, which is understandable. I personally wouldn't have thought that Heinicke would have come in for Fitzpatrick if Fitzpatrick was fully healthy, but Heinicke has shown that he can run an offense to a mediocre point.
Yeah, I think, look, Fitzpatrick's trash. Heinicke was always going to play this year. yes, okay, it happened via injury, but I think even if Fitzpatrick hadn't been injured, he'd have been benched by this point. I think the biggest riser in terms of raw numbers, so Cordarrelle Patterson in August was going undrafted. He's now currently the RB6 in terms of points scored so far this year. He has been an absolute revelation. You know, we discussed him, what was it, a month ago, Liam? Roughly. When we said he was a must-buy, go and buy him for a second-round pick. I still stand by that. I think you're probably having to pay a bit more than the second-round pick at the moment.
I tried to buy him in a few leagues and I've got met with, it's a first or not, or you're not getting him. Yeah, I'm not paying a first for him.
No, I think I'd go 2 seconds now. I might pay, if I'm a true contender, I'd probably pay a late first for him, because I just think that
He's 30. I can't do that for a 30-year-old.
7 weeks of RB1 production is worth a first in my mind.
I can't get behind it.
Even if he offers you nothing beyond this year, Liam, and he even if he regresses slightly and he's like RB12 rest of season, okay, if you're getting, what, 15 to 18 points a game from a running back for 7 weeks that you can get for a late first, that's absolutely a buy for me. I think where else can you buy a running back that's going to produce that? You're talking like 2-3 firsts.
But at the same time, where else are you going to buy a running back producing at that level that is also 30 years old and potentially doesn't have the same value next year? What happens if Ridley comes back? What happens if
the Falcons get a
proper wide receiver? What happens when the free agent market booms with a bunch of running backs this year? I honestly cannot see Patterson being much more. Yes, he will be better than what he was being drafted and what he's ever been apart from this season next year. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that that's not right, but I can't pay a first for someone that has such a murky future ahead of him on what is, sorry, Falcons fans, a poor offense.
I think that, look, we're never going to agree on this. I just think that a late first, if I'm a true contender, I can go and get him, pencil him in as a flex, and I'm probably going to win a title with him if he's my flex.
Two seconds I can get behind a push, but a first is just too much for me. Anyway, let's move on.
It's probably a late one. Another big riser, so DeAndre Swift. So he was RB9 in ADP. I think he was my RB4 or 5. He's now my RB2 in Dynasty. Look, the reason people were off him, I can't speak English, was because of that Lions offense, and people thought they were going to be terrible. But look, the guy's shown that he's one of the best receiving backs in the game, and he, you know, can produce fantasy points like no one else.
Yeah, I thought that Jamal Williams was going to be a much bigger part in this offense. I mean, he was for the first few weeks, and then he's kind of died down a little bit. So DeAndre Swift has completely proven me wrong. I wanted him later than the RB9, but now I wish I scooped up a lot more shares than I did at that price, because there's no way you're getting him anywhere below RB5 value in the dynasty scene at the moment.
Another big riser, so Austin Eckler. So he was the RB16. He's currently the RB3 in terms of points. I think people, you know, were kind of, I guess, dropping him because of age, and he wasn't the sexy name, that he wasn't, you know, your McCaffrey, Cook, Kamara, but he wasn't the youngsters alongside, you know, Taylor, Swift, Gibson, those sort of tiers. So I think that's the reason why he fell. But look, he's bargaining at that price. You 100% did call it, Liam. You are very right on that.
I am very happy on that call. He is currently the RB3 on this season, but he will overtake Henry into the RB2 potentially next week. So the only thing I would say about him is he's getting up there now. So he's 26, I believe, even though he's only been a starting running back for 2 to 3 seasons. He's getting older.
So what happens when you're an undrafted free agent? I think he had 4 or 5 years in college. It's always going to be slightly older than people think, aren't you?
Definitely.
Another two other big risers. So Leonard Fournette was an RB34. People were kind of, you know, thinking that was a split backfield, and he's basically come in and shrugged Ronald Jones and Gio Bernard to the side and been an absolute stud. And then another huge riser. We see it every year. There's a rookie running back that comes out of nowhere and is, you know, a complete stud, and it's Elijah Mitchell, was the RB69 in August. I'll be honest, it's hard. I'm finding really hard to value at the moment. I've got him as my RB29 at the moment. I think I probably need to bump that up a little bit higher. But it'll be interesting to see Jeff Wilson's back, whether he's going to carve into the workload a bit. But this week, he saw more of the passing game than he has done so far. So I think that Elijah Mitchell is certainly an interesting one to monitor going forward.
Yeah, Mitchell, I struggle with value-wise. I had a question posed to me whether I'd accept a 22 third for him. And I said, yes, I'd prefer a 22 second. But if I can get a 22 second for him, sorry, if I said third. But yeah, if I could get a 22 second rather than a 23 second, then I'd take that. But I'm not overly confident with Mitchell going into the future. I did say that he was, I believe it was my first pod when I came on with you as a guest, when we were talking about stuff before the draft, that Mitchell, I wouldn't be surprised if he did well with his profile, that he's a rookie profile, but as soon as he went to San Fran, I was not touching him because I didn't like that backfield, even though, as you always said, if you can get the RB1 in that backfield, then you're going to be looking at RB1 potentially every week. Yeah. But it just depends on whether you can actually guess who it is going to be. And I think when Trey Sermon eventually gets into some sort of NFL rhythm and Wilson's now back, maybe Hasty sees a little bit more work than he has been, but maybe that ship has sailed. And even Mostert, if he comes back this season, I don't know whether he will. No, I can't remember what the injury was.
He had surgery, didn't he? So I think
I did it. Okay. Yeah, missed that. So
I think for me, I'd need more than the second to be selling Mitchell right now. I think I'd if I'm selling, I think I'd probably need 2 seconds. I don't see why I'd be selling for just one personally, but I'm quite a believer when it comes to Mitchell. I have to say I've been really impressed, and I think he fits that scheme absolutely perfectly. Moving to wide receivers, so a big riser. I think, look, let's be honest, anyone that listens to anything I say, I wasn't surprised that he's a big riser. So Deontay Johnson, he was the wide receiver 18 in Dynasty Value, in ADP, sorry. I had him as my Dynasty wide receiver 11 to start the season. He's still my Dynasty wide receiver 11 as we speak. But look, the guy's just producing when he's on the field. I think he's top 10 in points per game at the moment. And I think that he's probably going to see an upgraded quarterback next year, whoever that is. You know, even if it was me at this stage, I feel like I'd be an upgrade on Big Ben. But yeah, look, Deontay's an absolute stud.
Yeah, I was right there with you with saying Deontay was going to be better than what he was being drafted at. But I won't hide behind the fact that I wanted Juju everywhere because he was cheaper than Deontay was. Yeah. Unfortunately, injury took that away. But Deontay's shown that with or without Juju, he's going to be the target hog in that offense. And let's see what happens next year when he does have that potential QB upgrade, because there are a couple of good QBs on the free agency market. Or the Steelers could be even going for a draft pick, seeing if they can get a QB in the draft. So let's see. I still like him regardless, because he will be demanding the targets. I can't see anyone getting as many targets in the offense as him.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess the biggest kind of stud, should we say surprise stud? So Cooper Kupp was the wide receiver 26. He's obviously the wide receiver 1 at the moment, and wide receiver 1 by quite a long way. He has been absolutely incredible this year. If you were getting him at wide receiver 26 prices, that's you're sitting pretty happy right now.
I think Kupp was a surprise to everyone of how well he's doing. I preferred him over Woods this season, but again, I had no idea he was going to be the wide receiver 1. I thought he was going to be a middling wide receiver 2 at best. So
yeah,
that's, again, a surprise.
And then two guys that absolutely boomed to start the season and are slightly starting to fade away a little bit at the moment. So it's Deebo Samuel, Mike Williams. They were up at wide receiver 2 and 3 to start the season. They're sort of falling away slightly as we're starting to see the other pieces in those offenses come to the table. But yeah, again, absolutely paying the value that you got them. Michael Pittman, we talked about him last week, so we won't go into too much detail, but he was the wide receiver 45, and he's looking like a solid fringe kind of wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3. And then Hollywood Brown, so he was the wide receiver 54 in August. We talked about him a couple of weeks ago, Liam, as, is this a true kind of wide receiver breakout? And I really think it is. I think he's still criminally undervalued. I think you can probably still go out and buy him for a round of first. I've got him as my wide receiver 20 now in Dynasty. I really think this guy's, you know, a perfect fit with Lamar. He's being used in different ways. We saw this Sunday. He basically didn't run as many deep routes and was instead being used as a kind of yak guy, you know, standing around the line of scrimmage, get the ball in his hands and watch everything go. It's really interesting to see him go.
Yeah, I think with Hollywood Brown, I think anyone is lying if they did say that they saw anything along these lines. I know that we've been speaking about it in one of our group chats with a couple of other guys off Twitter, so like Tom, T-Strack, as people might know him on there, and the Fantasy Wildcard guys. I love the fact that Brown has broken out, but the only thing I will say is I thought Bateman was going to take away from Brown, and he hasn't. Bateman still had his targets. He still got 20, I think it was just under a 20% target share in the last game, and Brown still had a 30% target share. That passing attack is going right now, and I don't know whether it stays like this, but at the moment, I think both of them are pretty good buys, because I don't think Bateman's being valued as what he potentially could be in the future right now.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think the obvious question is what happens when the two running backs in J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards comes back and they can hopefully get some sort of running game going again. I think that Hollywood Brown's the kind of guy that he can win you a week in one play, can't he? And I think that the value that you're having to pay him, I think he's probably still like a wide receiver 3 in terms of value. I think people are valuing him in that sort of wide receiver 30 to 40 range, which is criminal for a guy that's the wide receiver 6 at the moment. It's absolutely obscene. And then the biggest tight end riser, so Mike Gesicki, he was the tight end 10 in August. He's currently the tight end 3 in terms of points scored. It's going to be really interesting because he's a free agent at the end of the season. And this is a guy that lines up as a wide receiver like 85% of the time. So it'll be interesting to see if his contract, they try and argue that he's a wide receiver rather than a pure tight end.
It'll be interesting to see where he goes, because you really need an offense that will use him in that way. But if you're paying for Mike Gesicki, I suppose you know that you need to use him as that type of guy anyway.
He's basically being used like Eric Decker as that big slot. You know, it became fashionable. Yeah. Michael Thomas was that to a certain extent in New Orleans a few years ago. And that's basically what Mike Gesicki is. He's that he's a big slot that can stretch the seams, run those traditional tight end routes, but isn't lined up with his hand in the dirt. He's basically just being used as a big slot. So diving into the negatives, so the big fallers. So we'll start at the quarterback position. So we've lumped in 4 guys together here. So we've got Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, and Tua Tagovailoa. So, I mean, this comes back to one of my favourite kind of drums to beat, is that the most overrated thing in Dynasty is quarterback age. And that these are 4 guys that were being valued as fringe QB1s, you know, late QB1s, early QB2s. And now I think if anyone's got any of them in the top, probably, 12, 15, I think I'd be gobsmacked. Yes, there is incredible tantalising potential with all 4 of them. But from a fantasy perspective, they're absolutely not recouping on the value that you'd have to pay to acquire them right now.
Yeah, I liked Wilson before the season. I think he was going QB 19 earlier on in the offseason. I like that value there. I think that was the highest I ever took him. And Fields and Lance in startups were completely unattainable for me. I didn't get any shares in startups because I preferred the proven production over the rookies. I will say Lance, I'm concerned that we will see him at the end of the year, and I'll lose my bet to Tom over at Best Ball UK NFL or NFL UK? I forget whichever way it's around. But yeah, we've got a bet that we won't see Trey Lance until either Jimmy G's injured or San Francisco are mathematically out of contest for a playoff spot. So I'm concerned that we'll see like Trey Lance just before that. But yeah.
Makes you wonder how bad he's been in practice, that Jimmy G has looked pretty poor. You know, if you look at PFF, he's got the highest number of turnover by if he plays, and I think the lowest percentage of big time throws. He's not been great, but they're still rolling him out over Trey Lance. Moving to the running back position, so I guess the first two are kind of fallers based on injury, really. So Antonio Gibson, he got us all tantalised, didn't he? Week one, he had that incredible week one where he saw highest target share, JD McKissick did nothing. Everybody suddenly thought, oh, Antonio Gibson's going to be CMC 2.0, as Ron Pereira once said. And JD McKissick came back. Antonio Gibson's been injured and he's not really produced. And then down in Philadelphia, Miles Sanders, he was the RB21. I think he kind of paid off that value-ish when he was healthy. He was, you know, not a dream start, but he was plugging out 10 to 15 points a week and was a solid kind of RB2. And then obviously he's got injured and suddenly Philadelphia started running the ball, which I can't quite get my head around.
Yeah, I think Gibson has surprised me, but we'll see what he's like after the bye week this week, because he really struggled with his injury from what I saw anyway. He didn't look right at all.
He's playing a stress fracture. It can't exactly be a nice injury to be playing on, can it?
So, and then on Miles Sanders as well, I took him in a couple of leagues when I missed out on Montgomery as that solid RB2, RB3 flex play. In a couple of leagues, I just can't play him there. Like, he's just not been that good at all this season. So,
And then the biggest running back faller, so we've talked about him already, Trey Sermon, he was the RB23. In ADP, that one hurts a little bit. I don't think I've got any shares, but basically be a forgotten man is painful to watch. Do you have hopes that he will recruit some value and eventually get the potential to play, or do you think he's a dumb?
I think it's tough after year one to say anything on this. Like, You've got to remember Aaron Jones, before he got his chance, had 2 years sat behind Ty Montgomery, a converted wide receiver at running back. So maybe he does do something, but I don't see it. I thought RB23 was too high anyway. Sermon, I can't see it going forward, to be honest. He didn't look good. And Elijah Mitchell, who was taken three rounds later, has outperformed him in every way. So,
yeah. And then the wide receivers, so no surprises, Calvin Ridley was the wide receiver 8. Obviously, he was underperforming, but has now taken his mental health break. So hopefully we see him back on the field and he can start to, you know, show that he's the truly elite dynasty asset that we all hoped. I think my biggest disappointment this year, so Allen Robinson, he was the wide receiver 15, which felt a bit rich at the time, but yeah, that was incredibly rich, because he's plummeted, and I'm not sure you'd even get a second round pick for him at the moment. Brandon Ayuk, this one, look, he was the wide receiver 16. I had very high hopes for him. He fell into Kyle Shanahan's doghouse. We kept calling him a buy, and it finally feels like, Liam, the last 2 weeks he's starting to work his way out the doghouse. He's starting to get that, you know, around 20% target share and start producing. Do you think that he can get back to that fringe wide receiver 1 value that we saw?
Yeah, so I was ready to jump in when you were referring to us saying that he was a buy, to jump in and say that he still is a buy. Go and get him. I'm trying to get him in most of the leagues that I can. I do think that he gets back. We have no idea what this offense looks like next year with Trey Lance at the helm. So that's what I'm banking on next year. I do think people are maybe being a bit overly harsh on Ayuk, considering what we saw out of him at the end of last year. But yeah, I think that Trey Lance will breathe a new beginning at San Francisco next year. And whether that means good news for Ayuk At least I'm hoping so for those leagues where I'm going to try and buy.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess we can lump these three in a single tier, and it's the old guard. So Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham. So Michael Thomas, are we ever going to see him play again for the New Orleans Saints? I think he needs to find a new home, because it's very strange whatever's happened there. Julio Jones just can't seem to stay healthy. I've still really want to see him and AJ Brown on that offense. But yeah, it would have been nice to see, you know, the three physical freaks in terms of Julio Jones, AJ Brown, Derrick Henry all firing, but it looks like we're not going to see that. And then look, Odell Beckham has had far too many words said about him and typed about him over the last week. I'm a little bit fed up. There's a part of me that hopes this is kind of Randy Moss to the Patriots 2.0, and we see this incredible resurgence of a career, and he's going to go back to being that elite stud. Part of me also thinks this could be Randy Moss to, was it the Titans he got traded to, and then back to the Vikings to end his career, and he kind of pitted out and did nothing. So, less said about Odell Beckham, the better, I think, Lim.
Yeah, I think that was one thing we purposely didn't put on the significant news, because we knew we were going to talk about it later point anyway. He's still going through waivers at the moment, so we have no idea whether he's going to be claimed or whether he's going to be able to choose his new team. But I don't want him in any leagues. I've got him in one and I'm not happy about it. I did think he was going to bounce back. And then talking on Julio as well, I've got him in one league and I just want him to do something so badly, because I traded away Cooper Kupp for him thinking, there were other pieces involved and I thought I got a great deal. And now I'm stuck with Julio Jones. I'm still at the top of that leaderboard.
That's got to hurt.
So yeah, I'm still doing well, but yeah, trading Cooper Kupp for Julio Jones in a deal isn't good.
No, absolutely. So diving into players of the week, Liam. So we hinted about him earlier in the pod when we talk about high scorers. So your star of the week?
So my star is Jonathan Taylor. Sorry to talk about your Jets yet again and probably slander them a little bit more. But he scored 33 fantasy points, RB2 on the week. He had 19 carries for 172 yards. That's something we don't see from running backs very often at all. And I mean, across the entire NFL, you probably expect it from Derrick Henry going to play against a really poor offense or really poor defense, sorry. But it's certainly something I didn't think Jonathan Taylor could produce on just 19 carries. That to me is crazy. He also scored two touchdowns and then he still had two receptions for 28 yards. The only thing I will say is he did have a fumble. So for me, the thing I really wanted to talk about with Jonathan Taylor today was looking at his whole season. He's been incredibly efficient. So he's the RB2 on the season. He's got 821 yards, eight rushing touchdowns, only 140 attempts. He's got a 5.8 yards per carry right now. Behind Derrick Henry, I don't think that anyone is anywhere close to his total yards or his total rushing yards. And Derrick Henry's got, I think it's about 80 more rushing attempts. He's only about 200 yards ahead. I mean, Derrick Henry was still on for an incredible season, but the efficiency coming out of Jonathan Taylor, do you think he can keep it up?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, he's not going to produce like he did against the Jets every week. But
no.
The really, I guess, interesting thing for me is that Thursday was the first time the Colts have started all five of their starting offensive linemen together this year. And it was men against boys. Like, yes, the Jets up front, you know, the defensive line is all right. It's got a few interesting pieces, but their linebacking core is absolutely trash. But they were creating, you know, he was partner of the Red Sea at times. And I think that was talked about as being one of the best offensive lines in the league. And they've had a series of injuries. Obviously, Eric Fisher was coming back from, I want to say, the Achilles tear. So didn't start the season. Now they're all healthy and functioning. if they're as good as they showed on Thursday, look, Jonathan Taylor, it doesn't matter that he's not getting the opportunity share. If he's going to keep being as efficient on touches, I think, look, I moved him up to, he's my overall RB1 in Dynasty now. I really think that he's a top two, top three back this year. And I think, look, his wheels up. I think, yes, he's not going to get the CMC, Derrick Henry-style workload. They are going to still sprinkle in Naeem Hines. But look, if he can get 15 to 18 carries plus chucking, you know, 3-4 targets a game, I really believe that he can be behind that offensive line in that offense, top two or three running back week in, week out.
Yeah, I think with Jonathan Taylor as well, the thing that I like about him so much is he reminds me of Aaron Jones and Aaron Jones's efficiency. Like, you still see Naeem Hines getting his snaps, getting his targets, and getting his rushing attempts. Like, for some reason, they still bring in Marlon Mack every so often. But Jonathan Taylor is still being extremely efficient, and that's what Aaron Jones has been for the past 2 to 3 years. Is even though he's on a 50-60% snap share, he's still being extremely efficient and producing running back one weeks and seasons. So let's see whether Jonathan Taylor can keep this up and he becomes the running back one this year.
Yeah. So then my star of the week. So this is a guy that I think is a sneaky buy for a contender, and that's Joe Mixon. So he produced 28 points. He did that on only a 62.1% opportunity share. He obviously saw that 12% target share. And so far, he is RB4 on the year. Yes, that's buoyed by the lack of a bye week, but he's averaging 17.7 points per game. I really think that Joe Mixon is the kind of guy that you can go out and buy as a contender that can kind of tip you over the top. I think people look at him as an elite talent, but they're never going to throw him in that RB1 conversation. I truly believe that you can probably get him for a first and a second in most leagues. I don't think you're even having to pay him kind of two first range. And I just think that you could easily help, you know, if he's your RB2, even if he's you're playing him in a flex league, he's the kind of guy that can help win you titles, because I really think he's part of a fantastic offense. And they've shown now that they're going to give him a full workload.
Yeah, I loved Mixon in the offseason at the price that he was going at. People forget that he's still got a 3-year deal. I don't know whether there's any outs in that deal, so that might look a little bit differently. But he's still got 3 years left on his 4-year deal after this season. Looking at his average points per game, he is ranked 9th at the moment. So that's still extremely good for the price that you're getting him at. This is the guy that I'd prefer to spend my first on rather than Cordarrelle Patterson. Sorry, Rich, but if I'm spending a first, I want Mixon over Patterson.
Oh, I would never disagree with that at all, but I don't think you're getting Mixon for just a contender's first. I think you need to be paying more than a first. I think you need to be paying a first and a second, if not probably a little bit more, to get Mixon, whereas I don't think you're having to do that to get Patterson.
Yeah, understandable. Anyway, a little bit off topic there.
Spotlight player of the week, Liam. Now, look, we had a chat. I wanted to go one direction. You wanted to go another. And basically, you threw your toys out the pram unless we could talk about Jordan Love. So I've seen you. You're talking about him for the last 2 days on Twitter, trying to convince yourself that the future is bright beyond Aaron Rodgers. I feel like this is a little bit of a therapy session for you. So the floor is yours to talk about Jordan Love.
Let's just clarify this, Rich. I created the show sheet. I put Jordan Love in with a question mark, as I do every week. I'll put in suggestions in every box that we need to talk about. And you didn't comment on it or anything. I had to ask you whether you wanted to talk about him just to make sure that you wanted to. I suppose it is a little bit of a therapy session for me after Sunday. I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it. I'm not happy that you haven't watched the game, because I wanted to get your opinions. But
I've started with the good games. I'm working my way through the week.
Understandable. It wasn't
game,
awful.
So obviously that game falls down the list, unfortunately.
That was an awful game. So I get that. It was much more of a defensive game. and lack thereof an offense, shall we say. So his stat line isn't great. He only scored 11.9 points. He had 34 passing attempts on 19 completions. Sorry, he had 190 yards, one touchdown, one interception, five rushes for 23 yards. So he's got a little bit of rushing upside. Not a huge lot, but he can do stuff with his feet. The thing that I really wanted to talk about was people are going to see this stat line. You're going to see that the Packers only scored one touchdown. They're going to assume from just his points that he wasn't good. And by all accounts, he wasn't. There are plenty of things that I don't think he did well on. So a massive thing for me was accuracy. He was throwing balls. Even though they were getting to the receiver, they might have been slightly behind, slightly in front, making that catch a lot harder for a receiver to make when they're in stride. The big thing that I really wanted to point that out, which I don't believe people are going to ever see unless they do a little bit of digging, is initially that the Chiefs were credited with 14 pressures in the whole game. That's a great stat for any defense anyway. Upon further review by PFF, Love was pressured on 28 of his 39 dropbacks. That is insane for any defense. That 71% of his dropbacks, he had a defender pressuring him as he was throwing. That to me is insane. The Packers had absolutely no answer for any blitzes that were called. There's a massive difference between blitzes. I believe Love only completed, I think he was 6 of 17 passes on plays where it was blitzed for about 30 yards. Everything else came on a non-blitzed play. That O-line was terrible. Like Lucas Patrick, our center, scored, I think it was a preliminary score of less than 3 on a grade from PFF. Bearing in mind, if you don't know the PFF grading system, it goes up to 100, starts at 0. So that says everything you need to know. I want to know your reaction to this, Rich, because
I think
the stats are there for when he's not pressured and when that offensive line. I mean, they didn't have David Bakhtiari either, the best lineman. So I want to know your reaction because the stats are there for when he's not being pressured, and I think it was a hard game for him to ever come into. He's only ever had Davante Adams for 2 practices. Adams wasn't there in the offseason this season. He wasn't there for the majority of this week. So, yeah, I just want to get your opinion on this because I'm trying not to be a Packers homer.
Look, I've never really loved Jordan Love, the player. I didn't like him coming out. I thought the Packers trading up and taking him in the first round was absolutely ridiculous. I thought he was a third-round pick kind of development prospect. However, for the last 2 years, I've absolutely loved Jordan Love, no pun intended, the dynasty asset, because this is a guy that I think you can go out and buy for a second round pick. I think you can probably buy even less now after his performance in terms of statistical performance on Sunday. And this is a guy that, look, I hate to say this, Liam, but Aaron Rodgers is gone at the end of the season. There is no world in which Aaron Rodgers is back. Okay, the team is in a completely horrific situation from a cap perspective. He's gone, Davante Adams is gone, they're starting again. Okay, but Jordan Love will be the starting quarterback for the Green Bay Packers next year. At that point, he almost immediately becomes worth a first in Superflex leagues. Okay, so just from a perspective, you don't even need to like the player. You can go out and buy him for a second round pick probably right now, and he's worth a first in 6 months when Aaron Rodgers moves on. I think, look, as an asset play, he's a fantastic buy. As I said, I don't like the player. I don't think he's ever going to be a competent, average NFL starting quarterback. Sorry to say, Liam, I think he misses too many throws. I think he makes too many bad reads. And I think that he doesn't have the elite arm talent to get away with it. But he's going to be a starter there for at least 2 years. And at that point, as I said, he's worth a first-round pick in Superflex leagues.
The one thing I will say is he made some awesome throws. yeah, they weren't perfectly accurate, but there is one sidearm throw where he threw it around a defender and it was just outside of Davante Adams's reach. Maybe that's just me getting excited by any little flash, but at least he's showing something. So let's move on to the listener questions. So we've got a couple. So those that we won't get around to will respond on the Twitter thread. So first of all, we've got Martin at Lucky Fantasy Guy asks, with Elijah Moore and Javonte Williams breaking out, is it a good time to sell? What are their values? He's been offered a 2022 first and 2023 first for Javonte. Would you take that deal? So personally, in one QB, I turn that deal down in one of my leagues. Superflex becomes a different story. I don't know about you, Rich. I don't know where I actually value them at the moment. But I think they're really polarizing players to value.
So I love both these guys. Javonte Williams, I've got. He's my RB12 currently in Dynasty. So I've got him as a value of an early first in Superflex or kind of around two firsts, probably a little bit less than two firsts, sort of random firsts. So, yeah, if it's two firsts in a Superflex, I'm taking that as with you. If it's two firsts in a one QB, I'm probably leaving that alone. Elijah Moore, I'd need a mid first now to make that worthwhile. Yeah, I think that's kind of it. I think in terms of whether we sell them, I don't think it's now's the time to sell. I think that they're not going to lose their value over the next few weeks. And if anything, they've only got the opportunity to appreciate in value. And then when we get into off season, all you know, we become Twitter and Dynasty community becomes age obsessed, and we'll see them fly up, you know, ADP boards and rank boards because they're a sophomore player. So for me, I'm holding both of them. So Liam, the winner of our Dynasty roster review, and with the best question, so it is John Latecki Jr., who's asked us a question over on YouTube. So he said, what do you think of Tom Brady? He's coming off a bye. So is Washington, but it feels like a good matchup for Brady. What do you think? Do you think he's a must start this week?
I think he's a must start anyway. But yeah, this offense at the moment is clicking. He's meant to be getting Antonio Brown back, sorry. So I personally started him everywhere anyway. But this matchup just solidifies that for me. Washington haven't been the defense we thought they were going to be. Start all your books, in my opinion. Apart from Ronald Jones, he's still in the doghouse.
So Tom Brady, I haven't published my ranks yet. They'll be going after the show. But Tom Brady's currently my QB4 in redraft this week. So the way I work out adjusted fantasy points against Washington are actually the 32nd ranked team in terms of adjusted fantasy points against. So look, they're dreadful at stopping opposing quarterbacks. I think Tom Brady's an automatic start, but I absolutely love him this week. I don't know what time that game is, whether they count as the red zone competition, but I'll potentially be eyeing them up for some DFS on Sunday. But I'm sure the DFS guys will cover it much more. So whilst we're talking about it, we've got the exclusive free roll on Fan Team again. Listen live to the DFS pod on Thursday or live stream. They will be able to highlight much more. Also, don't forget Manscaped. You can get 20% off on worldwide shipping by using the code 5YARD. And so, first of all, John Latecki Jr., drop us a DM on Twitter and Liam and I will organise the Dynasty roster review for you. But if you're interested in getting that exclusive 5YARD Rush t-shirt, you can DM us the password, which is whatever the cocktail of the week was for Liam this week. You've got till 6 p.m. on Sunday. There it is in his lovely, he called it a martini glass, but I'm pretty sure that's a champagne glass.
No, champagne flutes are much thinner.
See, that's the difference. That's a champagne flute, but I'm pretty sure that's a champagne glass.
Oh, yeah. We won't dig into it now.
We're an hour and 5 minutes in the pod. I can drop my little nugget of wisdom, which I'm pretty sure the rumour has it that the champagne glass was modelled on Marie Antoinette's breasts. So there you go.
I won't be able to challenge you on that, and I really don't want to Google it. So
fantastic. And on that, guys, I think we'll end the pod. So thank you for listening. Thank you for those who sent in questions and commented live whilst we were going along. It's been fantastic to have you all, and best of luck. We'll see you again next week.